Hi, it's Colleen O'Brien for Sharp Vision Modern LASIK. I can't believe I waited so long to have LASIK. 2018 is your year for LASIK. Don't wait another year. For a limited time, receive $1,000 off your LASIK procedure. Go online to schedule your free consultation.
This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. We have all been focused on the amount of data that tech companies are collecting on you. But what about the overall consequences to our democratic form of government? There's a book out called The People Versus Tech, How the Internet is Killing Democracy and How We Can Save It. It includes one of the more dire diagnoses of what's wrong with us. And it's written by Jamie Bartlett, who is based in London and who is the director of the Center for the Analysis of Social Media. So you think that our democratic form of government is actually at risk because of the Wild West nature of what's going on here, Jamie?
Yes, I do. Slowly, little by little, not immediately overnight, but some of the core things that make democracy function, not just as an idea, but something that citizens believe in, are being slowly eroded. And part of it is elections and the kind of rapid amount of micro-targeting that politicians now do on people with personalized messages. But part of it is also much bigger. For example, the way that the police, frankly, are losing control of the digital streets. So much crime now goes unpunished. Or something, for example, about the possibility of large-scale automation of work, dramatically increasing inequality, a kind of new divide between digital haves and digital have-nots, which really undermines democracy as a system for well-being and economic stability. And so in all these ways, I think we can see an old system of government that we designed in a very different time being undermined by a brand new set of technologies that we're just really not ready for.
Well, how would the erosion come about? I mean, in one way, the internet is almost the perfect democracy because any group can organize for any cause and maybe even solve their own problems without government having to get involved. But at the same time, that can also, you know, hold true for a criminal enterprise as well. But so what do you think is which aspect of democracy is going to be first to go in this dystopian future you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a very obvious democratic boon here to social media. No question about that. It does allow people to organize and have a voice and get informed. But that can, I think, distract us from the fundamental underlying changes to how information is used and shared. And I guess the pillars that make democracy work beyond just individual freedom. And I don't think that it's a case of one thing collapsing. I prefer to, my preferred dystopia, if you like, is the slow erosion of trust that people have in democracy as a system that actually gets things done, gets crime solved, provides good jobs, has elections that people can trust and believe in, is full of citizens that are free from manipulation, are informed and are willing to compromise. I think all of those things are going to be slowly eroded in the years ahead, such that people start thinking in greater numbers, we don't really need democracy anymore. Why don't we turn to something like China? A kind of benevolent dictatorship.
Wait. China. Where did people get the idea that China was a benevolent dictatorship?
No. Sorry. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they look at China and then say to themselves, why don't we have some kind of benevolent dictatorship? A benevolent version of that.
There's no benevolent dictatorship. I mean, China. The minute you get dictatorship. They control the information, and they have precogs who arrest you before you commit the crime.
But that's my point. My point is that is the way that democracy could go. That people look to those kinds of things. Huh. Imagine that we can create a benevolent version of that, where we'll rely on technology for our wealth and our well-being. And we'll say, well, maybe technology is the solution to crime, to tax being impossible to raise. Maybe we should use tech to do that. Maybe we need to grant government more and more powers just to keep control of the streets. But don't worry, we're democracies. We'll be okay. And we'll will accidentally drift into something that looks like China.
Okay. Well, so I'm I suppose people could think that, but that would require them to have never read any history at all, since there is no example of a benevolent dictatorship that I can recall.
Millions of people repeatedly through the course of history have ended up voting for things or going for things that demonstrates huge amounts of historical naivety. There is a growing flavor for radical leftist communist inspired thinking in the West, which suggests a high degree of historical illiteracy. So don't be so sure that people can make the same mistakes of history again, you know. Right. That's one of the lessons of history.
Okay. Well, there are certainly fringes on both ends of the spectrum, but I think that the mainstream citizens reject most of that, right? And in terms of the targeting, I can see where we might be worried that somebody could manipulate us the way we were manipulated in 2016 and get us to vote in a way that we didn't originally expect to vote. But the more you look into that, I'm not sure we can make a case that Donald Trump won exclusively because of the internet. But in any case, I mean, there has been almost nonstop coverage of what Russia did since it happened. So aren't we wise to that now? Don't you think people have become properly skeptical of things that sound a little bit too much like they're in agreement with them when they see them on the internet?
I hope so. Yeah, I do feel like the last 3 months have been quite positive. It's shaken people up. I think a lot of people were asleep, and now they are aware of the manipulations that go on behind the scenes. But can I just suggest that I think the internet did make a big difference for Donald Trump's campaign, but not in the way people think. I agree with you 100%. There's a lot of liberals out there who refuse to accept he won, and they find a convenient excuse in the idea that there was a psychological warfare tool tricking people. I don't think that's what happened. But I do think that he took data campaigning to another level and targeted the right people in the right places with the right messages, just enough to swing key states. But to me, the direction of travel in elections is more and more of this data science, micro-targeting, finding persuadable people. And again, that's not a collapse of democracy, but it's a change in how we understand it. And it moves away from being about publicly aired arguments and more about data science. And that's one of the reasons then people lose trust, because those on the winning, on the losing side say the whole thing's flawed. Right. It's not fair. It doesn't work anymore. And that's where the seeds of disillusion start. And let me just say one other thing. Let's say that the automation crisis that everyone's talking about, probably overstated, I agree, but let's just say that it does mean that millions of jobs are lost, or we have a small number of very good jobs and more very bad jobs. So the middle class of America is kind of hollowed out by this technology. Do you not think that there will be pretty dramatic political consequences to that?
Oh, yes.
Because I certainly do. And I wouldn't be so sure that democracy can just sail through that easily. I hope it does. I wrote this book because I want it to desperately. But I worry about those problems.
Well, none of us want to turn out like South America. That seems to be what you're talking about here. And
Yes.
I think that before that happened, the politicians would have to come up with something like either a universal basic income or a radical campaign of universal education such that everybody is ready for these new jobs. And yet I have a feeling, you know, I look around at, yeah, there's a big wealth gap, but what do these wealthy people do with their money? Well, they invested in big houses, which people have to build. They invested in, landscapers, which still requires people. They sometimes will start philanthropic institutions, which have to be staffed by people. I mean, one way or the other, we may eventually become an oligarchy, I suppose, where we all work for the same six wealthy corporations. But people will always need something to do, won't they?
Yes, they will. And, you know, I'm glad what you said there about governments will react. So, yeah, people will come up with new policies and new ideas. But that's exactly what I'm saying, that it's time to react. It's time to start doing something about this before it gets too late. I agree there will be always jobs for people to do, but this is what worries me. Not that there won't be jobs, but that there will be a greater wealth gap between people. So yes, you'll have very, very rich people with massive, beautiful houses, and you'll have a lot of jobs of people who are serving those very, very rich people.
Right.
But the problem that you have, and one of the reasons democracy doesn't work so well in places like Latin America, is that with that kind of level of inequality, you get great tension, you get great corruption, you get businesses buying politics, you get people whose paths never cross in life because they live in completely different economic worlds, and that drives them apart. And you get higher levels of crime, you get higher levels of teenage pregnancy, you get all these other associated problems. And so, to me, the rising inequality that tech might create in the coming years is the thing to worry about, not a jobless future. And that's why, again, I think it took a lot of work for the 19th century American politics to help build and maintain a stable middle class. And I think we're going to have to do the same again.
Right. So the question is, how can we head off this future? And it seems to me that we're going to have to do what we did in the Industrial Revolution. We're going to have to form unions. The middle class will always outnumber the rich. There's no reason that we have to be subservient to them. We all are at a pretty high education level compared to what they were in the 19th century. And I think we know how to organize. I think actually the internet has in a number of situations actually brought corporations to heel by organizing boycotts and protest campaigns. Why couldn't we fight back that way?
Yes, I agree with you about the unions. I think that they... middle class has always been the most fervent supporters of democracy, not the rich liberal elite. It's never been them. It's been the middle class. And they have to get reorganized with unions because, I mean, in your country and mine, unions have been pretty hard hit over the last several decades.
Yes.
They're much weaker. And also with the new gig economy companies, they struggle greatly to organize. It's a totally new type of job. One of the key things that I suggest is new ways of allowing unions to form with these new platform apps, the kind of service sector. That's one of the many things that I think we're going to have to do, because unions have always been a way that the share of wealth in this country has been equally divided between, or reasonably equally divided between, people who own capital and the workers. And the share of wealth over the last 30 years, more and more of it has been going to people who own capital and not to the workers. And if we want to push back against inequality and the problems that brings for democracy, we have to arrest that trend.
Well, I hope that people do react in a way that preserves democracy, because I think it's pretty important. And for more information, you can consult Jamie Bartlett's book, The People Versus Tech, How the Internet is Killing Democracy and How We Can Save It. Jamie, thank you very much.
Dave, thanks so much for having me on.